I do not want to start with the weather today.
No, you don't, because it's Snowmageddon.
Bombagenesis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bombageddon for you.
Now, what I will say about... I am going to start with the weather. We got very little overnight here. I'm up in New England. It's the 29th of January. We're having this big monster something or other, which, you know, never believe the weathermen, first and foremost, because they're shysters and criminals. But right now we've got very little. It's supposed to snow through the day and be windy to the point where there's no point in doing anything to my driveway, which basically means my it's 5 o'clock somewhere is going to start around 12:01 noon today.
Good. So you'll be nice and loaded by the time the power goes out.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, I forgot about the power shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you get gas for your generator?
I've got enough gas that I can snowblow and run the generator for at least half a day before, before there's a problem.
Mm.
But I fully expect to be out and about again tomorrow. My part of the state, they were saying 4 to 6, then they were saying 6 to 12, and based on what I'm seeing right now, it's, I'm not going to say out loud, if I think this is a boom or a bust, because that's just a recipe for disaster if I tempt the gods out there. But I'm optimistic that this will be on the lighter side of what they had predicted.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You think I just made a huge cosmic mistake, don't you?
I can feel the jet stream changing right now.
Just because of me opening my mouth.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
What'd that old fat dude in Connecticut say? Oh, man. He's in trouble.
That's a Doctor Strange level multiverse mix up there, pal.
Yeah, I might have screwed up. Mm-hmm. I might have screwed up. Oh, my. So anyway, here we are. What's going on with you?
Not a whole lot, actually. We are in the worst part of Wisconsin of the year right now, which is deep winter, where you're in this holding pattern, just waiting for spring. And for us, spring, it could still be 6 inches of snow on the ground, but if it's above freezing, it's springtime. So we're right there, and people are like, okay, we're done with winter, let's get on with this. Mm-hmm. So, the local big box stores have put all their Christmas shit away, and all of the gardening stuff is out now. So it's like, let's do this thing. But it's like, it's a hangover. This is the weather equivalent of a hangover right now.
The gardening stuff, the labels on the gardening equipment is the only green you see right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
I love that spring is a mindset born of, we're sick of the shit, now it's spring, damn it.
We're done. Yeah, we're done with winter. That was all fine. They had snow for Christmas, but we're so over this. Meanwhile, there's a bunch of snowmobilers that are in southern Wisconsin that haven't had their sleds out in 4 years because we haven't had enough snow to open the trails.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so things are okay out here. We're in that deep part of winter denial. Usually it's you get up past Valentine's Day and then your brain's in spring. And so it could snow like a foot and a half, but it's not going to last that long. Whereas if it snows like that much in December, you're just like, ah, crap.
It'll be there for a while.
Yeah, it'll be there for a while.
Well, this mess that's going on today, it's going to be 50 on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't get it.
Me either. Anyway, so old man weather talk is over.
All right. Done with that. Mm-hmm. Done with that. So let's see. A couple of weeks ago, we had a conversation on new versus used.
Yep.
And we had some nice feedback on that. Instagram was buzzing a bit about my pictures of old tractors stuck in the woods, which was kind of amusing. And we started talking a little more then about, going beyond the new versus used on big equipment. But what about those cost decisions when it comes to the smaller things? And not necessarily, it's still big money in aggregate, but poles, like irrigation, where you've got a wide range of money you can spend, and you can spend a lot and feel good that you bought, expensive must mean it's better.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can get a good deal and, there's a reason retired free telephone poles are free.
Mm-hmm.
Which was one of my favorite things to say to applicants to the Charter Grower Program.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. So you brought up to me this concept of value engineering.
Right. Corporate speak buzzword for making something as cheaply as possible, whether it's a system, a process, or a widget. Making it as cheaply as you possibly can, first cost-wise. Knowing damn well that you're impacting quality, but doing it in a manner that the customer or consumer doesn't notice. Mm-hmm. And I hate it. It drives me insane, and I refuse to be a part of a business that does that. That's a play that companies use when they have no margin. And they really need to take a closer look at their business model and what they're doing, but it's too unwieldy and too unapproachable. So what they do instead is try to say, how do we cut our costs? And the way, instead of saying cost-cutting measures, they say value engineering. But the mindset, it's a mindset thing. It's a mindset thing. It's first cost is the absolute most important thing because it's all about cash flow. It is all about cash flow, but first cost will bite you in the ass if that's the only thing that you're focused on or the most heavily weighted criteria of whatever decision you're going to make about how you're going to run your business. And new versus used can be a component of that. And believe me, you're talking to like the tightest tight wad ever. So
well aware.
So for me to be saying, dude, spend a little money, don't be stupid about first cost, you better take that to heart.
Yeah, it because first cost is one thing, and this all comes back to our discussions of cash flow versus time you have available to fix the problems on the back end.
Well, and it gets worse than that though, because it's the law of unintended consequences, which is when you're swamped due to all of the unintended consequences because of the decision that you made that decision poorly. You made it without understanding all of the inputs and outputs and without critical thinking skills. Mm-hmm. You made it based on some other, you know, emotion, let's say. And usually for at least small scale hop growers, that is cash flow. Money in my pocket. And usually cash flow means cash out, not cash in. So
right.
So you're looking at it as a liability and you're saying, I got to do this. The only way I'm going to be successful, I'm going to run a successful business, I have to spend as little money as possible. Mm-hmm. And nothing could be further from the truth.
I'll never forget, because I've brought this up multiple times, and this is on the brewery side, not on the farming side, but when I took you to a particular brewery in Stratford, Connecticut, and you could look out over the brewery, and we saw some grain in the sun, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is you pointed at the bright tanks and said, those are the cheapest starter tanks you can get, and they clearly bought those. You buy those when you're not sure if this is going to work or not.
Yep, they bought them. They bought them from overseas, and you could see that they weren't even quite cylindrical, and they had big warps in them. And they were brand spanking new. The welds were all nasty on them. And I'm like, that, yeah.
It's not quite cylindrical good enough for a t-shirt. I think it is.
Sure. Although I think a t-shirt I'd be more likely to wear would say the welds were all nasty. But that you're exactly right. That's that whole thing of like, this decision was made to open and put this brewery here. They want to make a big splash, right? Because mm-hmm. it was a big place.
Oh, yeah.
And they put it in a sexy old building, and they were selling the sizzle. But, you know, it's like you don't want to know how the hot dogs are made, right? Don't look behind the curtain. And so there's – when you're cued into the industry in some of these aspects like the bright tanks or how they're choosing to store their raw materials in this big sexy place, it tells you they made the decision to be here based on something else.
Mm-hmm. They wanted they wanted the one that was shiniest on the outside, really.
That's exactly what they wanted because they were selling the sexy image of it and they were trying to build a brand and they figured we're going to do this as cheaply as possible because we're not confident this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So why put more into it than you have to if you're not confident it's going to work?
Absolutely. You just want to get through those initial phases and then go, okay, take a breath and now we're going to do it. Right, which in the long term, that's costing you more, certainly, now that you've been successful.
Correct.
Can I ask one favor? In the last maybe 2 minutes, you have used, I've heard the word sexy come out of your mouth more than I feel comfortable with at this hour.
Sexy.
And from you. So could we find a different word?
Lustful.
Oh, great.
Oh, yes, we can. Let me get the thesaurus out.
I'm trying to keep my breakfast down here. I mean, really. Anyway. I know you like when I take you off topic. So yeah, that to me was such a great example of seeing that in action, and that yeah, there, and at that point that brewery was doing quite well, so they were past the point of being a test case. And yet, you know, once you buy into some of those things, that's what you've got. I'm curious if we went back now and it's been many years, I'm sure they've replaced and reorganized
at this stage of the
game. You don't think so?
No, because they've that sunk cost and they're going to use those tanks. People are over it. Mm. And so they're like, hey, that gamble worked. So why replace them? Why spend the money when what they've got in place is working and nobody but me freaking notices? But it tells you something about the mentality. And I can see it in hop growers' operations as well. The thesaurus is giving me lots of great different words
for sexy.
For sexy,
if,
yes.
I will say, if we ever have that brewery on, some of the beer the name names will be the welds were all nasty and not quite cylindrical.
Not quite cylindrical.
Yeah.
Why the hell are you storing your hot pellets in the sun, you dumb fuck? Anywho, get the old blood boiling early in the morning.
There we go. That's my job.
Now, that's the James we all turn the podcasts off for.
You're all welcome.
Yeah. Okay, so give you another example of this concept of, quote, value engineering yourself into a hole. We all talk about maximizing our yields. So, you know, how often do we talk about this? It's the absolute number one question we get on the Discord. It's always something about yield, whether it's flowering or timing or training, and everybody wants the easy answer. And by now, at least the hopnologist should know there's no easy answer. Mm-hmm. One of the very first jobs I had out of graduate school was I was an orchard manager and cider maker. And the old crotchety ass that I worked for was super duper tight. And he was a semi-retired, no, I think he was retired emeritus, professor of agricultural economics from the UW. So you could not tell this guy anything about agribusiness because he knew it all, right? He had this orchard that was overgrown. It had just weeds and grapevines growing in it and whatnot. And the trees had never been pruned right. And I'm going in there looking at this from a technical perspective saying, how in the hell is this orchard even productive? And it was marginally productive, right? It was a U-pick place. So he's charging already an exorbitant amount for apples for the experience, right? Mm-hmm, sure. And he would yell at me for basically trying to keep up the orchard for proper agronomic reasons because it cost him too much money. And the only time he would go in and let me do any sort of like grounds maintenance, like weed removal and mowing and that kind of stuff, was when he was going to open up a couple of rows for people to go and pick.
Sure, if it blocked the experience, then it needed to be fixed.
Right. But what he didn't understand was that was right during the peak of the season when there's 50,000 other things to do. And he's got me out there battling weeds and grapevines and making things look pretty. And the amount of time it took me to do that and the amount of, not just me, all the other people he'd have to hire to bring in to clean those rows up. If we had been doing proper production practices the whole time, there would have been less labor involved in the overall upkeep, and the quality of the product would have been better. But no, all he saw was the first cost and saying, no, I'm not going to have you out there on that tractor mowing, you know, once a week or out there limbing up and doing proper pruning in the wintertime because that's going to cost me money.
Right.
Of course it's going to cost you money, but you're doing it to make money. And you would have thought, you know, a professor of agricultural economics would understand something like that, but he didn't, right? So he was value engineering his entire production process around what he perceived as having no value, mm-hmm. which was proper upkeep, because all he saw was what it was going to cost him to do it.
Right.
And I see the same thing in hop yards, small scale hop yards, the exact same thing. And usually it's around weeds and maintenance. And people will then wonder why they have insect problems and disease problems and their yield is low. And it's because, well, what are you doing about your weed control? Mm-hmm. Well, I just can't keep up with it. Right. Hire somebody. Oh, well, that costs money. Aren't you running a business?
Things do cost money.
You have to spend money to make money. You've heard of this idea? That's what businesses do. Businesses are an engine to move money around the economy.
And you know, it's interesting to me what you just said about the fact that, you know, you leave the weeds go, you let them continue to be a problem, and then you have pest problems and other problems as a result. I wonder how much of an understanding that is, that A leads to B leads to C, as opposed to, yeah, the weeds look like crap, but I don't have time for them. I can work around them when I'm doing my other work.
Well, I mean, there's probably some of that. I mean, there certainly is a lack of critical thinking and in everywhere. But the, like with the apple example, the man wasn't stupid, right? Mm-hmm. All his focus was solely on how can I get a product, an apple in this case, to have someone come and pay to go out and harvest. I don't even have to pay to harvest it for as absolutely little as possible. Mm-hmm. Really strip away all of the other criteria to one thing. How cheap can I make this and how much can I sell it for? Mm-hmm. Quality is not an issue. Don't care about quality, right?
Wow.
Because it's like, well, they're going to come for the experience anyway, and what do I care, right? Well, it's embarrassing. That's why.
Yeah, you want them to come back again.
Right. And so, yeah, quality doesn't matter. It's going to be what it's going to be. People are going to buy these apples anyway.
Sure.
If they don't buy them, we'll turn them into cider. That was the thing, right? I'm like, mm-hmm. well, dude, it's Wisconsin. You can't use windfalls for cider. Only if you get caught, right? Nice. And I'm just like, so everything was around how little he had to put in compared to how much he could get away with. That's what it was. It was, how much can I get away with here?
Oh, wow. But did he look at it the same way? Was he looking at it as, I'm trying to beat this system? Or did he legitimately not understand I know you said he was not a stupid man, but did he legitimately not understand that he could have taken this to another level?
I think that he did understand that, but he wasn't interested in that.
Okay.
He was interested in how do I get as much out of this system with putting in as little effort as possible. Mm-hmm. And you get to a point where that you can't balance that, you know, you don't balance it at the end of the day, and that's still the output's still not going to be enough for you. So then you start cheating the input side, because you're saying, hey, my input costs are not being covered by my output costs. So what do? Well, can I invest more in my input to, let's say, double my output? No, you don't think that way. First place you go to is, I have to cut my input costs. Mm-hmm. And that's value engineering. And you've got to really, really resist that urge, because that's the last place you look when you are trying to... it's the last place you look when you're trying to run a sustainable business. No. If you're trying to run a sustainable business, you don't even look there. Right? That value engineering your business structure that way is something you do when your business is not sustainable. Because that's a prelude to the end.
Right.
Because there's going to be a point at which you cannot, quote, value engineer the front end any lower and still expect to get anything out the back end without it being total garbage.
Uh-huh. And you know, I prefer the vernacular you used earlier to value engineering, just saying you can't get away with it. At right. the front end, because that's absolutely what you're trying to do. You're trying to game your own system, and we can get away with using this time, and next time we'll come back and do it right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good luck with that, because if you get away with it once, it's going to be really hard to justify in your mind spending more to do it right the next time.
Exactly. So it's I think in my mind, when I when I what we brought this topic up together. It was like, you had mentioned polls and, you know, cheaping out on that stuff and physical things. And I'm like, yeah, that's I think the first thought, because that's where all small scale hop growers start, is, you know, how much is this going to cost me out of pocket? Mm-hmm. My thought, having run the business for several years, is in the actual cost of operation, where it's so easy to make those individual little onesie twosie justifications in your mind about cheaping out. You know it's not right, but it can save you just that little bit. So you're like, I'll do it this time. Yeah, but I won't do it again. Bullshit. You absolutely will. And then before you know it, you've got all these little things piling up, such that on the input side of these business decisions that you've made, they're not sustainable anymore.
To your point, when you're first starting out, you're looking for efficiencies. And blurring the line between efficiency and value engineering, sometimes you don't know any better at those stages. So many times I would get applications to the grower program, and they would start with, I've got a cousin in the telephone industry, and he can get me all of the wire and all the poles I need. So I know you say it's $10,000 to start up an acre, but I think I can do it in four. It's like, okay, let's have an honest talk about what you're getting here.
There's that, and there's the idea that I can see what you've been clearly focused on in this concept of a business plan. Mm-hmm. You're focused on first cost of your infrastructure. Yes, it's significant, but what about the rest of your costs? What about your running costs? That'll be fine. It's not going to cost me anything because my labor's free.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother thing. Everyone knows how we feel about that. Uh-huh. But yeah, it's you know, they realized they had, let's say, half, for math's sake, half of the costs were free. Well, then I might as well get into this business. It's like someone dumping, you know, a plot of land and a whole bunch of lumber on you, and you're going, huh, I've never built a house before, but I've got all this stuff.
Right.
Why shouldn't I build a house?
I'll give you an example of me, the process I went through, where I could have gone one route and way cut into, you know, cheaped out big time.
You know, we need theme music for past James, future James stories, because that's okay, clearly what this is going to be.
Okay, yeah, I'll find some. The greenhouse. I'll never forget, we had hired Amanda to be a field supervisor, and it was her first day, and she's like, you guys should build a greenhouse and grow plants. And I'm like, yeah, that's interesting. And then I just couldn't drop it. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought about it. I'm like, God damn it, she's right. And so I started looking into what it would cost us. And what was I focused on? I was focused on first cost. What's it going to cost? How little money can I spend to get into a greenhouse? So how little money can I spend for as much greenhouse as possible? And so you start looking around, right? And I'm talking to major greenhouse manufacturers, and I'm looking in like Agritech magazine for build your own greenhouses, right? Mm-hmm. We had enough people on hand where I'm like, I'm not worried. We can put the greenhouse up ourselves. So I'm not going to pay somebody $100,000 to come in here and put up a state-of-the-art greenhouse, hydroponic greenhouse type thing, which we weren't doing hydroponics, but that's was all the rage. Or I can get one of these greenhouse frames and plastic and put it together ourselves, because I felt that was within our wheelhouse to do that, right? We can do that.
Having never done it before.
Of course, exactly, because that's how we roll. Mm-hmm. Well, we had put our barns up by ourselves, and we knew how to do that, right? So I'm like, this is not – we can do this. I have the know-how. I've got the people. I've got the tools. I did not have the time. That time should have been spent in the field, right, maintaining things. But what were we doing? We were building a greenhouse. Right. So, and as we got into it, it was, oh, we need one more thing. Oh, we need one more thing. Oh, we need one more thing. And that's when you start looking at, holy shit, this is going to cost me a lot more than I thought it would. Because what did I know about it, right? I didn't do enough homework. Mm-hmm. I didn't go talk to enough people. I didn't really consider it. Plus, I wanted to do it, like, really badly.
Uh-huh.
Because and so I was almost, like, not going to let myself talk myself out of doing this. In the end, it worked out great, but I would have made different choices had I understood the actual cash flow that was going to come out of this place, knowing that I didn't have to value engineer as many of those final aspects of the construction of that thing, if I really understood how much cash flow was going to be coming in. Because then I look back on it and said, okay, wow, okay, we have the cash now. I can go back and I can do this, which I did. But I looked at that saying, if I would have spent that money in the first place, I would have saved a whole bunch of time. And time was the thing I didn't have enough of.
Yeah.
Although it came out reasonably well for us, had I not value engineered that greenhouse as much as I did to get started, I would have had more time, less maintenance later. Instead of all these other headaches I had to deal with, knowing that now I know this is profitable, so now I have to keep this up, and I have all the sunk cost in time. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It's, you know, it's one of those lessons learned. And I mean, I would say the other thing you got out of that that you wouldn't have gotten if someone else had built it was that, to your point, there was maintenance down the road that you wouldn't have known how to do if you hadn't built it yourself. That's the only thing off the top of my head that ends up being an ancillary benefit that you wouldn't have had.
True. There's a downside to that, which is James is the only one that knows how to fix it.
Well, yeah.
Like the whole control box for all of the automation in the greenhouse, I built it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All the relays and timers and switches and sensors and stuff, I built it because I could do that. Right.
Yep.
But there was no manual for it for Amanda or Hannah or Simon to figure out how to fix it if something went wrong.
So it was all you. Well, that in the corporate world, that's known as job security. and we all do that. Sometimes it's a lucky accident and sometimes it's entirely by design.
Mm-hmm. But it does keep one from, say,
going on vacation
or sales trips or conventions or things like that, because you're like, holy crap, what happens if, you know, the heat goes out in the greenhouse and nobody else knows how to fix it? So then it's like, okay, now I got to figure out a way to teach other people how all this works, and here's a manual for it, and blah 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 blah. Instead of, had I bought a control box that would have come with that already done, I would have saved a whole bunch of time and effort, where money would have bought me time and a product that would likely have functioned better.
Yeah. Man, it always comes back to time. It's the one thing that, you know, we say you can't buy it. Here's a case where you could have bought time.
Yep. Yeah, there's very few cases where money will truly buy you time. Money can buy you hands to do more work in the time that you've got. But in this case, it would have completely offset my expenditure of time that I could have been using to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where value engineering really screws you in your own time management. And then I think in the Apple case, and frankly in the Hop cases, where I've been in fields that have had switchgrass up above my head, and people wonder why their hops aren't growing.
Oh, jeez.
Right? They've got an acre worth of poles up, and I can see like 8 hop plants that have actually survived. And they're like, what's going on? I must have some disease. Yeah, your disease is called laziness. Get out here and take care of your weeds. For Christ's sakes.
For how many years have I been saying to you, we should do a choose your own adventure book where it starts with, my hops aren't growing. Well, do you have weeds? Yes or no? And just like, have, you know, go to page 4 if you have weeds. Page 4 says, go cut the weeds. And
make, roll a 4-sided dice to make saving throw against Downy Mildew. Would anybody buy that? That might be a good game for us, Greg. We could come up with
just hops dice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Hmm. Okay. I'll take that off to the side. There's something there.
Yep. Oh no, I got +1 defense against Downy Mildew. I have Ritamil Gold on my side. Okay.
I'm thinking of the Venn diagram between D&D players and hop growers, and you know, our potential market. When you print a game like this, can you make it in under 25 unit quantities? Because that's probably our overlap.
Yeah, about 25 probably people. About 25 is probably totally is. Yeah.
A couple of hopnologists are raising their hands, going, "I would totally buy that."
Can we do this online? Yeah. Oh, so funny. Anyway, So back to
greenhouse.
The greenhouse was an example of where I value engineered a bit. I would say I value engineered the most there.
Mm-hmm.
Where I didn't value engineer, where I knew up front I wasn't going to run, I wasn't going to play that game, was with the harvesters.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, you guys got this harvester, and how much does it cost you to produce it versus sell it, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, could I make these myself? What would it cost me to make these myself, to do all this in-house? And you run those numbers real quick, and a lot of the equipment I already had, you're like, yeah, I could almost do it. But the quality would have sucked.
Mm-hmm.
I could have produced something and sold it and, you know, sprayed it with a bunch of rattle can paint and slapped a couple of inkjet printer stickers on it, you know, and called it good, right? And be like, hey, whatever I can get out of it, I can get out of it. That would have been grumpy old apple farmer man's idea, but that's not what we were trying to do. I mean, I don't want my name on that.
Sure.
So how are we going to do this in a truly sustainable manner? How is this going to be able to work? So I think there were a few glitches there in terms of like assembly and whatnot, where I should have paid more to have other people assemble them instead of our team. Mm-hmm. But
our team, that would be you.
Well, and Simon and a lot of the other people that we had working for us during the summertime, when they should have been out in the field.
Right.
Take a little bit more of a hit on your margin and have them put together and created for you instead of you doing it yourself. I'll take that where I did cheap out a little bit on that back end there. But again, because it's like, hey, I got these people, it's not going to take us long. Let's just put everybody on it and it'll be done in a week. A week is like forever time in hop production.
Oh, God, yes. I mean,
the amount of stuff you can do in a week in July from a weed control standpoint is huge. So the time that those guys and gals were in the barn creating and assembling and testing, they were not out on weed patrol. Mm-hmm. And things like thistle got away from us and other invasives. And then you're spending the rest of the year trying to catch up from it. Where it would have been like, really? Why? I just pay the fabricators to assemble these things for you, create them for you, and be done with it. But I didn't value engineer the front part of that, which was outsource it to people who could do it better, faster, and cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And know your limitations.
Right, yeah. Right. And we had, I mean, those were quality units.
Mm-hmm.
Built by good people.
Absolutely. Yep. Quality units built by good people.
Mm-hmm. That should have been the tagline. Yeah. Instead of, what the heck was the tagline? I don't know.
I don't remember. Everybody does it. Everybody has that.
Oh, sure.
That moment where they cheap out because they're, I don't know, is it, I think it's, most people do it because they don't think through the whole process critically enough.
Yeah. And you know, I give people a little more credit and say, well, they didn't know what they didn't know. But I think you would take that and say, then do the research until you do know.
Yeah, exactly. And be willing to pivot when those gotchas pop up and you know how to address them. And usually that's with the expenditure of money. It's those people that know, that do it intentionally because
the apple farm. Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to get something, you know, something for nothing. Basically they're trying to get more out of it than what they have to put into it. I shouldn't say that. That's stupid because that's what you're trying to do with any business. You're trying to add value, but they're mm-hmm. trying to create value for themselves by skimping on the inputs
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
cheating the system.
Well, I'll give you a completely different example, but one I'm sure you've seen in your day world, in the corporate world side of things. I handle a lot of software installations and access to information. And probably once a week when someone says, I need access to this, and I say, okay, we need to buy you a license, the response is, well, can I just, you know, I only need to see this and this. Can I just share a license with someone else in my department?
Mm-hmm.
It's, to me, it's no different. You're sub-optimizing what should be a normal process in order to save a couple of bucks. And you're intentionally doing it.
It's just a license. You're not hurting anybody. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Really, right?
Yeah.
That's what you think. Same thing with operating systems where people are like, hey, yeah, I got a new computer. Can you get me Windows? Well, you can buy Windows. Go ahead. Well, it's just a program. I mean, everybody has it.
Mm-hmm. Who can get me the student price? Mm-hmm. Student price, someone, please.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's harmless. You're not hurting anyone. But I'm thinking more along the lines of you're making it harder for yourself as well. You know, sharing the license example. Okay, now you got to borrow someone else's account to use it. Mm-hmm. You can't get to what you need when you need it. Sometimes you just got to do things right.
Right, and there's the shortcutting. Yeah, that's what it is, right? Shortcuts,
mm-hmm.
right? Everybody thinks that their shortcut is exactly what it is. It's a shortcut. They call it a shortcut because you're jumping the line, right? There's a lot that you miss
mm-hmm.
by not taking the path that's laid out in front of you and trying to short circuit it for some sort of savings, whether that savings is time, whether that savings is expenditure of cash or whatever it's going to be up front. It rarely works out for anybody.
Look, every horror movie ever made has a shortcut in it somewhere. Someone's taken a shortcut, and that's where the serial killer is.
Yep. And the quote shortcuts that do work, right, that people find out, like, oh my God, this is a shorter way or a different way or a better way to do it. Okay, that's not necessarily shortcutting the system.
That's innovation.
That's innovating, right? And so they're like, well, what's the difference? I don't know, intention? maybe some innovation has been born out of people taking a shortcut, being lazy and cheap, but really? Or is it that they were thinking about a different way to do things and they tried them purposefully? I think those are two different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would tend to think you're right. Because rarely do you find innovation from trying to skimp. Usually innovation costs a lot of money to figure out.
Yep, and you never get there. You never actually innovate if you're not willing to spend what it takes to get your answer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being in the biotech world, I see it every day. And the amount of spend that these biotech giants have in R&D that never come to fruition. But they're learning other things along the way that they can apply to other things. And if they had tried to shortcut that, they would either end up with a suboptimized system, a really crappy product that would probably kill people, or, you know, all sorts of ugliness like that, right? So you can't value engineer innovation.
Yep. Yeah. What was the product? The hair product. Merck did Propecia years and years ago. That's a men's hair loss product. It was supposed to be a cancer treatment.
Right.
And they stumbled. Well, it's not fixing that, but man, these guys are getting hairy. And
yeah.
Voila. That is legitimately true story about how that product was created.
Is that what happened to you?
That is no.
You fell into a vat of Propecia and now you're a giant ape human?
Mine involved gamma rays.
Ah, of course. Always with the gamma rays.
Mm-hmm. More instant effect, that sort of thing.
Ah.
But pharmaceuticals are a good example just because they have massive budgets for R&D because they know that if they keep on, you know, it's the monkeys and typewriters. If they mm-hmm. keep on trying stuff, they're a little more directed than monkeys and typewriters.
A little less random than that,
a little less random. But, you know, if you keep on going down these paths and trying new things, either you're going to find what you're looking for or maybe something will surprise you.
Yeah. I hope so.
Like uncontrolled hair growth. Those are shysters and criminals.